Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, hour number 2 of 3, now upon us this evening on the Liberty News Radio Network. I'm your host, James Edwards, coming to you live this evening from downtown Memphis, Tennessee, my home, born and raised here, plan to die here, hopefully later rather than sooner, but here I am tonight, downtown, at AM 1380 WLRM Studios. Going out also, in addition to our flagship radio station here, to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network across the country and streaming live around the world on our internet simulcast, which can be found exclusively now at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keep in mind, if you're listening to this live or if you are catching this later, that would be in the future in the archives, a couple of the links got changed around this week. We're making it easier for you to listen online for our online listeners. If you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and you click on the Listen Live tab, of course, you want to click on that during Saturday nights from 6 to 9 Central Time. Of course, that's the only time we're on live. Otherwise, you'll be getting other programming brought to you by Liberty News Radio. But there at thepoliticalcesspool.org, you can click on the Listen Live link during our normal weekly broadcast hours, and an instant pop-up window will appear on your screen, and you'll be listening to our online stream, maybe a scream, depending on who's calling in. Broadcast archive still available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Check out those new links at thepoliticalcesspool.org. 2 weeks from tonight, big, big event, folks. And it's not too late for you to make your plans to be there. We have been hawking this now on the radio for, 2 months? We had Richard Spencer on a couple of times, including last week, to give it one final hard plug. But if you still have not made your plans to join us in Washington, D.C., where I will be 2 weeks from tonight, it is still not too late to do so. In fact, I encourage you to do so. Make your plans now. If you haven't done so already, go to NPI for the National Policy Institute, npiconferences.com, npiconferences.com. I have agreed to speak at what promises to be an unprecedented weekend gathering in Washington, D.C., September 9th, 10th, and 11th. This incredible event, as I mentioned, is being sponsored by the National Policy Institute. I'm wanting you to join me. The festivities will kick off with a press conference at the prestigious and historic National Press Club on September the 9th, that's Friday, followed by the main conference on September 10th. Now, I'll be speaking at the press conference and at the main conference itself. Both events, I'll be there. I'll be speaking. You'll be able to see me, meet me. I'd love to shake your hand. I'll be speaking at the National Press Club, flanked by my good friends, Jared Taylor of American Renaissance and Peter Bremelow of VDare will be the three speakers at the National Press Club. And then at the main conference, it'll be Peter, myself, Jared, in addition to Sam Dixon, Tom Sunich, Richard Spencer, and many others. Folks, all the news that is news about this event can be found, the press conference and the main conference, at npiconferences.com. You have 2 weeks, literally now less than 2 weeks, since this thing kicks off on Friday, September 9th, less than 2 weeks now to make your travel plans to get to Washington to register for the conference, all of which, hotel accommodations, all of that information can be found at npiconferences.com. Folks, I've spoken at a lot of events over the years. Keep in mind that this radio show has been going on now for 7 long years, 7 incredible and joyous years. And through those 7 years, I've spoken at a lot of events, done a lot of personal appearances and book signings and you name it. I am really excited, though, about this particular conference. The caliber of the speakers is second to none. All of the meetings I've been to have been enjoyable. This one promises to be a little bit special. And if I can say that, I promise you, you'll be saying that too. It's in Washington, D.C. Again, folks, September 9th, 10th, 11th. All the info at npiconferences.com, or you can just go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, where we always have a recurring link on Sunday mornings To say that this will be a weekend you'll never forget would be an understatement. NPIconferences.com. That's the website you need to go to. Okay, I've done my duty. I've done something I wanted to do. I've plugged that. Now let's get back into the political cesspool. And what better way to get back into the political cesspool than with a headline like this? Now, you're going to think I'm using a derogatory term here, but no. This is what they themselves are wanting to be referred to as. In Toronto, Canada, sluts. Sluts take to the streets. I am not making this up. If you have not yet seen this video report that was big news at the time, I encourage you to go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go back to a blog entry that was dated August 22nd, last week. Sluts take to the street. A few months ago, here's the story. A police officer in Toronto, Canada, was invited to speak at a local university to give a few pointers about personal safety. Seems reasonable enough, right? Police officer that serves the community coming to a local university to give a few tips about personal safety. You're in college. You're getting out of the nest for the first time. You need to know these things. During the officer's presentation, he said that women should, quote, avoid dressing like sluts, end quote. Avoid dressing like sluts, he said, in order to limit their risk of being victimized. Again, that's pretty sound advice. You go looking for trouble, you might well find it. Ladies shouldn't be dressed immodestly anyway. Avoid dressing like sluts. It will limit your risk of being victimized. Now, no decent person would have been offended by such sound advice. Unfortunately, we don't live in decent or reasonable times. The officer who said that, I mean, you would think he said the unmentionable N-word, for God's sake. The officer who said that was reprimanded for his remarks and summarily dispatched to sensitivity training. Sensitivity training. Meanwhile, now get this. Now, that wasn't enough that he was reprimanded, that he was sent to diversity training or sensitivity training, whatever they're calling it. It so enamored sluts, if you will, that thousands of them, or radical feminists, in other words, thousands, literally, you got to watch this video, thousands of radical feminists organized a march, which they themselves called the slut walk, quote unquote, the slut walk, in an attempt to make some sort of radical egalitarian point that I can't even decipher. The officer in question, of course, after attending his sensitivity training, later apologized for offending sluts, naturally. But, I mean, folks, these are people who are being displaced in their own country. Their nation is turning into a third world flop house. But they're willing to organize and march, thousands and thousands of them. There's more political because he said the word slut. Right, I mean, folks, it's messages. Crazy. We live in times stranger than fiction itself. Check it out at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and I'll be back to tell you more right after this.
When the truth is found to be. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right. Welcome back to the show, the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. You know, Keith and I kicked off tonight's show back in the first hour talking about the Martin Luther King Monument to Greed. And as we mentioned, a fan of this show was kind enough to email to me an article that he had written that he asked to be posted to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. I read the article, and it was so good. And so succinct, it not only encapsulated everything that needed to be said about this monstrosity, it said it in as few words as possible. And for an editor, it's just brilliant. And it was so good that we're going to make it our featured piece tomorrow on the website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And I'm also going to share it with you now. And I share it with you not only because it's a good piece, but because, once again, as I so often like to do, it showcases the talent and the intelligence of the rank-and-file political cesspool listener. I could not be more proud of our listening audience, such a well-informed, articulate crew you are, so loyal, so giving. You know, you have made this show possible. You contribute to this show in more ways than one. And this is a fella, again, a great article that really says everything that needs to be said, no more, no less, about the MLK monument that's being unveiled and debuted on the National Mall in Washington this week. And I'm going to read it now verbatim, word for word, beginning to end. Here's what it reads. In a few days, thousands of Americans will descend on Washington's National Mall for the official unveiling of the Martin Luther King National Monument. President Obama will speak, arriving almost directly from his luxurious Martha's Vineyard vacation. Tears will be shed. King will be beatified. And the $120 million sculpture will take its place as the new mecca for the civil rights cult. And, of course, the white people in attendance will genuflect before the monument. The so-called civil rights leaders in attendance and the president figuratively donning sackcloth and ashes to atone for the alleged sins of their distant forefathers. Virtually every aspect of the spectacle, of course, will be a tragic farce. The ever-expanding narrative of King as an infallible saint is bellied by the fact that he was, in life, a notorious whoremonger, a communist, an extortionist, and a plagiarist. These are according to FBI files, folks, not us. Obama will slip into his black accent and channel his inner Kenyan, though in truth he owes all of his success, education, and eloquence to his white maternal grandparents. The civil rights movement will be memorialized as a time of unification for the country when, in fact, it unleashed a federal attack against the southern states that continues to this day. Desegregation will be praised with no mention of the fact that the practice has turned thousands of our public schools into war zones and permanently ruined our public education system. The few blacks killed during those years will be mourned, while the millions of white victims of black crimes in the years since will be forgotten. It is sadly appropriate that the scandalous facts regarding the building of this monument to revisionist mythos are themselves being ignored. First, in a fitting nod to King's political leanings, the sculpture was actually made in China, a move that shed $6 million from the project's cost. Then there's the fact that the King's family estate strong-armed the memorial's organizers out of nearly $800,000 for the right to use his likeness and words, most of which were plagiarized. But the most egregious scandal, one that has been and most certainly will continue to be ignored by the media, is the financial management of the nominally non-profit foundation that organized, funded, and built the memorial, formerly known as the Washington, D.C. Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial Project Fund Incorporated. With brazenness that would embarrass Jesse Jackson, the foundation broke out the Fortune 500 list and rounded up six- and seven-figure donations from corporations across the country, Boeing, Target, Verizon, Best Buy, DuPont, ExxonMobil, FedEx, etc. The single largest donor, ponying up $10 million, was General Motors, a corporation in such dire financial straits that it received billions in taxpayer-funded bailouts. It's hard to blame those corporations, though. Their tax-deductible donations to King's legacy certainly cost their shareholders less than allegations of racism would have. So, what kind of nonprofit organization was the foundation? If not for its $761,000 MLK Invincibility Shield, it could be best described as a scam. Charity Navigator, an unbiased organization that ranks the accountability, integrity, and effectiveness of nonprofits, gave the foundation 0 stars out of 4. Its total score is 10 out of 100. Now, that puts it right on par with the SPLC, if you're wondering. this abysmal rating is attributable to two main factors. First, the foundation spends most of its money trying to get more money, literally. More than 53% of its expenses are for fundraising, and another 18% go to administrative expenses, whatever that means. The other factor is the exorbitant salaries it pays to its executives. Over the last four tax years, for which records are available, 2006 to 2009, Foundation President Harry Johnson was paid more than $983,000 in salary and over $50,000 in expense allowances. Chief Financial Officer Richard Marshall got over $626,000 in 3 years. These salary levels are far out of line with nonprofit standards. In fact, of the more than 5,000 charities evaluated by Charity Navigator, the Martin Luther King Memorial Foundation was number 8 on its top 10 list of highly paid CEOs at low-rated charities. Last year, Johnson, who is the, again, the chairman of this MLK monument scam on the National Mall, was paid more than the combined salaries of the directors of the Museum of the Confederacy, S. Waite Rawls, who has been a guest on this show, and the Robert E. Lee Memorial Foundation chairman, Dr. Paul Reber, both of whom have far more distinguished professional and academic qualifications. In profound but unintended ways, the new MLK Memorial perfectly captures the man and his legacy. It was crafted in the world's last significant communist state, China. His heirs reaped obscene profits while maintaining moral superiority. Its organizers did the same, successfully parlaying white guilt into cold, hard cash. It will be unveiled by a black president for whom ending racism is doublespeak for ending the white race. It sits in a predominantly black-ruled city that would surely descend into sub-Saharan African anarchy without its never-ending stream of white tax dollars. It will be lauded in forcibly desegregated schools where white students often fear for their own safety and indeed lives and are socially engineered out of their natural, innate, and justifiable pride in their own heritage. The monument to a myth that will be unveiled in Washington this week is a farce, but that doesn't render it insignificant. It is uniquely significant because it serves as a benchmark to show how terribly far our once great nation has fallen. Folks, if I tried with all of my might, in no way, shape, or form, could I have written an article about this MLK monument that would have surpassed that one? That was written by one of you, a Political Cesspool fan, who sent that in to me via email 2 days ago, that will be featured on our website tomorrow. Folks, if you want to read that for yourself and click onto all of the links that provide proof of our facts, I encourage you to do so tomorrow at thepoliticalcesspool.org. That article will be featured nearly the entire day tomorrow, Sunday. Stay tuned. More to come right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, well, folks, you heard that last commercial that was voiced by our producer, Art Frith, and that's no joke. You know, we've been here for 7 years, thank God. And for 7 years, you have sustained us. It costs quite a bit of money to keep this show on the air, to meet our budget and pay for our overhead. And for 7 years, you have not let us down. But it is a continuous effort, it is, to keep the wheels on the wagon here. Folks, if you enjoyed the show, simply support the show. We need your support. We're out here doing our part. And we know you are good to do yours. But we always have to remind you that as much as you've donated us to us in the past, we need that continued support in the present and indeed the future, because we hope that the first 7 years is just a drop in the bucket to the years to come for this radio broadcast and the success that we have been able to have and hopefully build upon. And we plan to build upon it. You know, we've got big plans. Lots of stuff coming up this year, and of course, the most immediate of which will be this big conference in Washington that we've been talking so much about. Going to the National Press Club, folks, that's pretty big news, and I'm excited to be able to be there as a representative of this radio program, taking your voice to the nation's capital. Anyway, if you like the show, you want to support the show, you can do so tonight by going to our official website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You will there quickly see a link that will allow you to contribute online safely and securely with your credit card. We would appreciate any support that you would like to give. A lot of people help this show stay on the air, and we love each and every one of you. Speaking of Washington, D.C., I got a video up a couple of days ago, and it seems as though, you know, normally when I post something up on the website, Eddie the Bombardier Miller strolling in here now. I didn't know, I normally shut the door to the studio. I'm digressing now. I was about to lead into another story, but I normally shut the door. That way, you know, I have a little bit of a warning before someone walks in on me. But I'm here in my swivel chair behind the soundboard with my microphone in hand, and I'm swiveling around. And when I swivel around, I thought it was the Yeti or something walking in. But it was just Eddie. Not the Yeti, but Eddie. Yeah, he's here. Yeah, we got to get better security around here, I tell you what. How you doing tonight, Pappy?
Well, I couldn't be better. I just came back from a 2-hour and about a 2-hour and 48-minute walk at the old park. Going hard, going for the old half marathon the first week of December. Ain't too bad for an old geezer, you know, as a matter of fact. Because, you know, James, you remember back in 07, I was in the ICU here in Memphis. And matter of fact, did a show from the old from the Methodist Hospital North here in Memphis. Couldn't be better, son.
I remember one night we were doing a show. This is before we moved downtown. This was in the old studio out there in Millington. And you were co-hosting with me that night. And this was back in 07. And you left the studio and you never came back. You were in the bathroom like coughing up blood, and blood was coming out of basically every orifice, your mouth, your nose, and others we won't mention. And I don't know what was going on that night. Do you remember that night?
I certainly do. I went in the old VA. Blood pressure was about 240 over 140. And I tell you what, folks, it was hell. The guy getting that nosebleed, I'll digress here just a minute, but I'll tell you what it's like having a nosebleed when the ENT doc can't stop it. The first time they couldn't stop it, the guy put a tampon up my nose, believe it or not, and he told me to let me know. The doc said, let him know when he hit the brain. I thought he was joking, but it hurt so bad, you know, I swear he could have hit the brain. About 10 days later, James, it sprung a leak again, as the chief used to say, it sprung a leak. And that time they put a little pneumatic tube in it and hooked it up to a syringe and pumped that sucker up, and they broke my nose that time. They got that stopped, got me on the right blood pressure medicine. Blood pressure's perfect now. I got the heart strong as a gorilla and ready to rock and roll, son. But I'm really looking forward to the show tonight. I thought we'd respond to, you know, our brother Keith Alexander and I went to lunch one day last week, and one of the rare days I was free. He talked about a caller and who got in touch with him, saying something about the police, some show you and I did together, and he made a, then the caller who got in touch with Keith made a remark about a show we did one night, and I said something about going off with the police. So that links up to some stuff I thought we'd talk about tonight.
And I know we're going to talk about that in the third hour. Actually, Eddie's a little early to the studio tonight. You know, these old folks like Eddie, they arrive early. They don't arrive on time. They don't arrive late. They arrive early. So, you know, even though Eddie's a little bit 20 minutes ahead of schedule tonight, I figured I'd go ahead and introduce him and get that out of the way. But Eddie's been exercising tonight. As he mentioned, he took a long walk. Keith's been doing the same. Keith is riding, I think, 11 miles on his bike a day. He said he's lost 35 pounds, which he equates to losing 35 grains of sand out of the Sahara Desert. But no, Keith's not obese at all. He's not even really overweight, but he has definitely, lost a few pant sizes. Anyway, what I was talking about before you walked in, Eddie, and interrupted me. Well, let's talk about this for a minute here. In Washington, you know, I'll be there in 2 weeks. Are you ready for that? Now, I asked Keith this question. I'm going to ask it of you very quickly before we get back to the news. See, here in live radio, we can chase rabbits, and we can get off track, and we actually enjoy doing so.
It is fun.
It's real. You know, Hurricane Irene is going up the eastern seaboard right now. Going to hit Washington, going to hit New York, or did hit Washington. It couldn't happen to a better place, as Eddie said. Hurricane Irene's blowing through Washington. I'm going to be there in 2 weeks. Who's going to cause more consternation?
Well, I think Hurricane Irene is going to have to take a back seat, James, as you know. Matter of fact, my wife is going to be in New York. I think they're going up there around September the 10th. But I said, and they said for the first time in history, they think they're going to have to evacuate the people and maybe evacuate the subway system. But, yeah, getting back to what you said, the hurricane, man, I mean, what a wuss. A hurricane ain't jack compared to the cesspool guys.
Yeah, so your wife is going up to New York on the anniversary of September 11th, in other words. Yeah. And, but of course, you're not going this time.
No, you know.
Eddie.
I don't think I'm too
well up there. Eddie last took to Times Square. King Kong had nothing on Eddie wearing his David Duke for Senate t-shirt in Times Square, but and he was wearing political cesspool t-shirt another day. He didn't wear them both at the same time. Anyway, in Washington, back to the story I was about to talk about, you know, 10 minutes ago before you got here, Ed. I'm going to be in Washington in 2 weeks. You know, here at the political cesspool, we believe in law and order. Laws are laws. Rules are rules. We abide by them. Law and order every time. That's us. Now, the same thing can't be said for our tolerant liberal opponents, Eddie. As you know, in the past, we held a pretty big meeting here in Memphis back in 2008, I believe it was. You remember it? You were there. I was there. About 300 other people were there here in Memphis. And countless threats to blow up the hotel that was hosting our conference were levied. This comes from the tolerant left. You know, the worst I've ever done is a couple of speeding tickets. I overpay my taxes. That's how law and order I am. You know I do. And, you know, they say I owe this much. I'll say, well, keep the change. And that's not a joke, folks. That's actually literal. So the worst I've ever done, a couple of speeding tickets. And, you know, you can't really help it in some of these speed traps. You know, we've talked about that before. I used to get a speeding ticket all the time going to the radio station because, you know, they changed the speed limits, you know, 15 times in a one-mile stretch. What are you going to do?
Well, it's a revenue.
It's a revenue. Yeah, we know that. It's all about, you know, more revenue for the municipalities. But that's the worst we've ever done in terms of breaking the law. Actually, you and Bill and Winston and Keith haven't even done as much as me, you know, getting a couple of speeding tickets. But that's the worst we've done. Our opponents, they threaten to blow us up. They threaten to shoot us. They do all this on a weekly basis. I actually called the FBI on one of the death threats. One of the first death threats I got. They never called me back. So I called the local police, and they came over and took a report, but nothing ever came of it. But this was actually one of the death threats that puts a date and time on my death. They said, you know, well, I'm going to come and kill you at your house at this time, so you better be ready. Yeah, this was back in 06 after we first started making the news. This was a year and a half after we first went on the air. And I got that death threat, which was the first of, you know, countless ones to come. But, you know, and FBI never called me back. Police came over, took a report. Never heard back from them either. But at least they showed up. Anyway, this is our liberal, tolerant, diverse. You know, they love diversity. They love diverse ideas. They love, you know, the peace. You know, they're the tolerant crowd. This is what we get out of them. The worst we've ever done is maybe a speeding ticket here or there. But, however, I think we can all agree that if you're going to go to jail and protest for a cause, you might want to consider making it a little more meaningful than your right to sell lemonade on Capitol grounds. And I'm talking about the Capitol building in Washington. They have a no vending policy there, which means, you know, if you're a bum, if you're a vagrant, you can't, you know, as we see in Memphis all the time, you can't steal newspapers and go squat on a piece of land and sell them back to the public. You can't sell your dirty socks like they do here in Memphis. And anyway, toilet paper. Oh, yes, we saw that. Yeah. We, driving around Memphis, we had this, you know, black vagrant, and he was selling toilet paper on the side of the road. I'll get to the crux of the story right after this. We got to take a break. I'll tell you all about it. Stay tuned. I'm sorry, folks. We're chasing rabbits too much here. We'll be back. Good rabbits.
J.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Listen, we're having a good time behind the scenes here in the station tonight. Actually, I'm glad that Eddie came in when he did, and he caused me to waste so much time there in that last segment, because we had a chance during the commercial break to watch this video together of these kids being arrested in Washington for selling lemonade. And this gets back to the story that I was originally going to tell you in that last segment. So, first of all, again, if you're going to get arrested, do it for some, you know, don't do it at all, first of all, because, you know, as I said, between all the five cesspool hosts combined, I'm the most, I'm the biggest outlaw because I've had a speeding ticket. And anyway, if you are going to go to jail and protest for something, make it a little more meaningful than selling lemonade. I mean, you got all these white kids here. They're being displaced. They're being systematically replaced in their own country that their ancestors carved from a wilderness. They couldn't care less about that. I mean, you don't see them going out and protesting, you know, the discrimination, the anti-white discrimination that they're saddled with in affirmative action and quotas and set-asides and all that. They're not protesting that. They're out there selling lemonade and getting arrested on principle for the right to do that. So on one hand, again, I get back to this. I can understand the law to an extent here, Eddie. Because it basically, if everyone was allowed to set up shop on the Capitol grounds, it would look like a huge yard sale. You'd have, you know, all these Washington, D.C. area citizens, which are majority black, and they'd be doing like they do here in Memphis. They'd be sitting on the sidewalk with socks and toilet paper, and they'd be selling it. It'd look like a big mess. So, you know, you don't want the bums and vagrants, you know, squatting on the Capitol lawn, selling their stuff. Yeah, it's bad enough they're in the White House. So, but anyway, on the one hand, you look at it that way. I can understand the law here. There's a no vending policy on the Capitol. Why go in? You know, why try it? Now, I also hear that they're enforcing this in people's yards, that you got to have a permit to sell lemonade on your own sidewalk. Now, that's a different story. Now, if they'd gotten a video of that instead of doing it, you know, you can't do anything in Washington. You can't hardly even walk by the White House without getting arrested. So if they'd done it in a kid's front yard, you know, a five-year-old, five-year-old be a little young, I don't know, eight-year-old selling lemonade, and the SWAT team coming out and arresting the eight-year-old, okay, then you got a point. But here on the Capitol, nah, I don't know. But talk about misplaced concern. Again, I'd be willing to bet that none of these teenagers who got arrested here or early 20-somethings getting arrested, you know, they couldn't care less about the fact that they're being displaced, but by God, they're going to take a righteous stand for their freedom to sell lemonade. If you don't know what I'm talking about, folks, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. The title of the article is Going to Jail for Lemonade. So on one hand, again, to be repetitive here, I can understand the law. No vending policy on Capitol grounds makes sense when you take into account the demographics of Washington. So don't go there and vend. At the same time, on the flip side, this is where I'm going to turn it over to Pappy here. If you watch the video, you see four or five well-mannered, well-spoken, white teenagers, early 20-somethings, selling this lemonade for 10 cents a cup to people who pass by and want it. We're talking about Washington, D.C., which is one of the murder capitals of the world, one of the most diverse cities in the nation, which means it's one of the most crime-infested cities in the nation. And in order to enforce this no vending policy they've got there, they literally send out the SWAT team to arrest these four kids. And I'm not joking. You see 15, 20 cops here on hand. They bring a paddy wagon to arrest these four kids who are obviously unarmed and selling lemonade. And I'll let Eddie take it from there if he can keep it clean.
Well, it'll definitely be clean. You know,
they think they're rangers.
Yeah, they a bunch of wannabe rangers here, you know, a bunch of thug police. By the way, this works perfectly into the story we're going to talk about tonight, one of them. You know, this happening all over the United States now, James. They're trying to get people to accustomed to living in a police state. My daughter, she's been down from New Jersey going on a year now. She had a friend. You know, she graduates from college in November with a degree in nutrition. She has a friend who grows herbs and stuff, you know, up in New York, where New York comes together with Connecticut and Massachusetts and all that area up there. They arrested her, James. They came in. They come in just like this. They bring the SWAT team in. They warned her to stop growing vegetables and herbs in her front yard up here in New York.
So we're not talking about marijuana. Here.
No marijuana. Vegetables and herbs. They had warned her about it, and she refused.
What was the problem with growing?
They just didn't want her to. They did not want her to do that. They said it's a control thing. Well, they come up. In the middle of the night, like 4 o'clock in the morning when her husband's gone, they kick the door in, they arrest her, take her in. And while they have her in jail, they come out there with the equipment and bulldoze her in her entire yard down, bulldoze her front yard down. But that's typical for what's going on in all of the United States. Like you point out, James, here we have people being raped. You know, there was over 100,000 white women raped by blacks within the last 4 years in the United States. Illegal invaders coming in here from Mexico. They're everywhere, just as thick as hops. And they don't have driver's license. They don't have insurance. You know, God only knows they don't have liability insurance. They get by with murder, but they're out trying to arrest these kids for selling lemonade. That works in perfectly with the story if we got time. It's a sign of the...
We're going to get into...
Nothing. There's nothing new under the sun. With a story that this links perfectly with the kind of thugs we're recruiting into the police departments nowadays, and that's going to link up into what's going on with Fast and Furious on the Mexican border, and they're going all the way back to Pappy Bush when he had Zapata Oil Company back in before he was ever even the head of the CIA, and before he was a vice president of the United States, and before Mena, Arkansas, and the drug cartel there that went on with Slick Willie Bush. Excuse me, Slick Willie Clinton and Poppy Bush. But we'll tie that all in when we come back from this break, folks.
Well, we're not going to a break quite yet. I just didn't think we had enough time to get into all you want to get in. But I got an email that came in just now from a political cesspool listener, very observant. Good question. Two natural disasters hit Washington, D.C. the same week they try to unveil the MLK monstrosity monument there at the National Mall. The week that they unveiled the King statue, he writes, the Washington area suffered an earthquake. Someone said it was George Washington rolling over in his grave. On Sunday, the scheduled dedication of the ceremony, Washington suffers a hurricane. So a hurricane and an earthquake in Washington, D.C. in the same week, that's got to be unprecedented. That's got to be an earthquake and a hurricane in Washington in the same week. Is God trying to tell us something? So writes one of our fans into the show right now. Yeah, now that he mentions it, you know, obviously we all know that an earthquake hit a couple of days ago in Washington, and today a hurricane. Is that unprecedented in the history of Washington, D.C. weather, an earthquake and a hurricane? I mean, how rare are both of those occurrences in that area and for both of them to happen the same week?
I've seen four years, and it'd
be the 1 week that they are unveiling the King thing. I mean, that's got to be... Well, they're probably all in hotels in Washington waiting to go out, and the evangelical ministers are all in Washington waiting to go out there and worship King, you know, their God. But hey, speaking of, I'm glad you brought that up. This is a regularly recurring segment now, or a recurring question I must ask. Did you go to church last week, and how was it?
Matter of fact, I did go to church last week, and it was. I think I enjoyed it more. I had enjoyed church in many a day because the gracious Spaniards were never mentioned. We had a really good Sunday school lesson. Matter of fact, I have to go in tomorrow, 7 o'clock, to work the brunch. The gracious Spaniards won't be there tomorrow. If they were going to be there, I would not be there. But, yes, I really enjoyed church, and, you know, I've got so many friends there, James. I've had some scrapes there before. Matter of fact, I had a pretty hot little argument Friday with one of the junior ministers over this Rick Warren guy, who's a charlatan. I mean, the guy's a charlatan. He's right out of the pit of hell. And I'm trying to turn our ministers on to make it road about the guy's true calling. What is this? It's not from God. It's the devil. I'm in contact with a place called Southwest Radio Ministries out of Bethany, Oklahoma. They're sending me some more material, James. But how much time we got now, son? I'm going to get into this police thing a little bit, if we have time.
Well, you've got about a minute or two. It's not enough for you, Pappy. I know how you like to... It's like Neil Diamond's song, Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show.
I can't even think of the verse, you know. But you know how Brother Love does. He starts off. Slow like a small earthquake, but when he lets go, half the valley shakes. Well, that's Eddie. It takes him a minute to get built up, and then he turns loose. But we just don't have enough time for that right now. Hey, but I tell you what we do. We do have time to give people a little teaser of what's forthcoming in the third hour. I know Eddie's been dying. He's just been chomping at the bit to get into it here every second he's been on the air this hour. But Eddie's going to chase a couple of rabbits. For all of our conspiracy theorists out there, we've got something for you coming up. Eddie's a little more into it than me. Not too much as a conspiracy anymore because it's just so out in the open. I mean, it just, you know, can't even qualify as a conspiracy. But there's still a couple of things out there that for even our most attentive listeners might catch them off guard. Not to say it's not true. Eddie's quoting FDR over here saying, if it happens in politics, it's planned. Here's another one.
President Wilson once said that he has been associated with the greatest captains of industry, generals and admirals in the military, millionaires of all kinds. And he said to the man, they all were afraid of something they said you couldn't speak above it, above a soft tone in this company.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about black flash mobs. The United States National Slavery Museum is in trouble. Is Ron Paul the one? We're conducting a little straw poll. More on NBA crime. An American hero died. It's going to be an action-packed third hour. Stay tuned, folks.